Welcome to Weekly Wings, your go-to podcast from DroneLife.com, where we soar through the latest in drone technology, regulation updates, and exciting innovations. Each week, join Samuel, Terry, and I as we navigate the drone industry, offering expert insights, interviews with key figures, and a bird's eye view of how drones are shaping our world. From commercial applications to recreational adventures, Weekly Wings delves into how these remarkable vehicles are impacting construction, education, agriculture, filmmaking, delivery services, and much more. Whether you're a professional drone operator, a hobbyist, or just drone curious, tune in to stay informed and inspired as we explore the heights of what's possible in the world of drones. Subscribe now and never miss an episode of Weekly Wings, where the future is looking up. Welcome, everybody, to this exciting episode of Weekly Wings. How you doing, Terry?
I'm doing good, Paul. Thank you for asking. I'm here and alive.
That you are. And Samuel, how are you doing on this wonderful day?
Yeah, I was going to say doing well. Honestly, I'm surprised I don't have any drone show things up my sleeve today, but you know, we'll get by on this episode, I think, without a drone show.
Yeah, not last week too. I think last week slipped by, no drone light shows, this week potentially nothing else. But that just means that, you know, things are building up in the the wings, right? There's probably some exciting light show stuff that's just building up that we'll eventually have to talk about. And on this episode, we're going to cover, again, some really interesting, intriguing news, information, things that are happening in the drone industry. Just one, you know, extremely significant thing that's happened since our last episode recorded was the assassination attempt on former President Donald Trump. Just significant news for the nation, for the whole world, something we're not seeing. This is some real-time political drama just playing out, and as anything happens in real time, there's always folks that are, you know, trying to find, you know, can a drone have added value or made things better? So, you know, we'll discuss that a little bit. On the tech spotlight, we're going to be looking at an ultralight electrostatic VTOL drone that's been developed over in China by, I believe, some students, university, some research. Going on there. We're also talking about, last week we talked about NASCAR going EV and electric. This week we're going to be looking at Harley Davidson, bunch of money in order to potentially start manufacturing electric motorcycles here in the United States. A success story that we're going to look at is the Youngstown Police Department in Ohio being able to deploy their drone for a suspect chase incident very successfully. And then we'll end in our regulatory corner looking at the Senate version of the NDAA for 2025. So without further ado, jumping into the assassination attempt on Donald Trump's life. Where were you guys? What were your thoughts? Do you even, you know, I don't think it's been a whole week. Do you remember where you were?
This was Saturday, wasn't it?
Watching the UFC personally.
This was on Saturday.
Right. Yep. Yeah, I think it was a around 12 p.m. I heard. But no, that wasn't it. What time was it?
No, this was around 6. It was
six? No,
it was
way.
Just after 6. Yeah. Yeah. 6:11. I believe if you look at the timeline.
I remember someone texted me, said someone tried to assassinate Trump or someone shot Trump. And I'm like, oh, wow. What time was this? I think Terry texted me shortly after that, too.
Yes,
oh, my God. You're right. Yeah. That was 6:30-ish, wasn't it? I thought it was like way earlier. I guess my time frame's off, but yeah, I don't think I had an exact mindset of the moment. What about you, Paul?
if I remember correctly, I think I was washing my car. And so going in and out, I've got like a foam cannon for the power washer. So spray it, let the soap sit. I walked inside, turned on the TV or looked at the TV and just saw this unfolding. Like it must have been very shortly after it happened. And like the kind of headline was up on the bars, like assassination attempt on Donald Trump. And I just kind of watched it play out. And it's like, you could tell he didn't fall to the ground. Like it was like getting down to the ground in order to not get shot again. So it was like, I think he definitely got hit. I'm pretty sure he was alive. And watching all the Secret Service, I was like, oh, that's what it means to be Secret Service. Like they're literally creating a human blanket. Yeah, like a human blanket around the president, and they're just like layering and then another person. So I was like, if the bullets continued to come toward the president, I was like, they would literally, it was the Secret Service who would be taking those. So I can remember thinking very clearly, like, wow, that is intense. And then the shoes part, like I can remember in the recording, you could hear him like, I need to get my shoes. And I could just think of like a grandfather or an older father being like, you know, you're like, we need to get out of here. He's like, I need my damn shoes. Stop it. And it was like the give me my shoes. I want to have that security on my feet, I guess. Like if we're running out of here, I'm not doing it barefoot. And then the turn and the blood and I was like, holy hell. I was like, this is intense happening right now. And I was like, Lauren, I think someone's trying to shoot the former president, Donald Trump. And it was pretty crazy. And then she saw it and looked and watched and she was like, yeah, it was kind of like confirmation that what I was seeing. And then it was kind of crazy to say this now, like I had to go get the soap off the car. So like we got the kids and it's 6 o'clock. We're trying to get this you know, the routine is having to carry on. So I'll probably never forget that. Not as cool as the way he, you know, the story that his perspective. And Terry, you weren't watching UFC. Where was like early prelims on? Is that, that
it was it? Was early prelims. Somebody texted me in the Snapchat group that I was in. It was like, Trump just got shot. I was like, pull up Twitter. You might be the only person that actually found it out via like a news channel. I think everybody else finds out by Twitter nowadays.
Yeah.
Luck of the draw, you found out. opened up Twitter and it's everywhere.
Well, at the same time, seeing it on the TV news is like, I know this is, there's like a 99% chance this is real. Because if it's making it there, versus like you see something on a social media feed, you're like, you know, what the hell am I looking at?
I mean, shortly after though, my phone started blowing up with the news feeds, like just notifications. I'm assuming yours did too, Terry.
No, I don't have notifications on. I knew it was real though, because the first clip, like the first little tweet I seen was the video of him getting shot. Like, I was like, all right, well, it'd be hard to fake that.
The only notifications I get, I was like thinking about this today, is for the kids monitor, like the baby monitor. I hate the notifications. So like, you get the text notifications. I get the text notifications, but the baby monitor, and I'm getting really angry because they're using the allowed notifications to market to you. So they're like, oh, buy this, buy that. And I'm getting kind of angry because I'm like, you're sending me a notification and my kid is fine. Like, I don't
capitalism at its finest.
And you already put the money
down. I don't
want to
buy things. If I see Hubble, if I see a notification from Hubble showing up, I want to know that that's like your kid just fell out of bed. Not, hey, we have a summer sale, 20% off. I hate notifications. So where were the drone? Like, so as this happened, like, regardless, if you're just stepping back and looking at from a security standpoint, you know, whatever political figure or whatever happens in the future, the person wasn't like a well-trained, you know, they didn't like crawl in and find some you know, less than advantageous position to do this from. It was just like the creepy part now is you watch, if you see the things, it's like, I don't have the video up here, but it's like you can see him in the background. It's like the horror movie, you know, in the horror movie when everybody's just kind of sitting there watching and then there's that weird thing that goes by and you see him like just walking in the background and he's kind of like, oh, that looks like a good spot to go. And he's just doing all this. You're like, wow, that is, you know, pretty creepy. I just think people are saying, well, a drone could have been used once they identified this person. And we're looking for them as a force multiplier. It potentially could have seen these high places. I'm really just believe that there's no reason someone, not even a counter sniper, but just a rent-a-cop. You could have sold seats to Trump supporters, put some chairs up on that roof and had people pay you to sit up there. And that would have been secured. So you could have made money and secured that rooftop. There's just really no reason somebody could, a scarecrow, anything could have been up there. With the range. That's just the opinion I'm under.
Yeah. See, I got some opinions, but we'll try not to delve into those.
And so this article comes out in Forbes. Lewis, the last name I'll butcher, Figueredo. Lewis Figueredo, he is with Elizabeth Police Department out of New Jersey, detective and drone pilot. He is I'd say a subject matter expert in this industry on the drone side, but then also on the public safety aspect of it. And this article kind of came out and it was saying, you know, where were the drones during this rally? And it talks about the Secret Service has spent, you know, $400,000 on drones. None appear to have been used during this incident. And details with access to this equipment is what Lewis was saying at this level. And it really doesn't even matter whether it's DJI or this, the budget and the funding is kind of shouldn't be a factor. So even with blue drones, NDAA compliant drones, there's solutions out there. There's really no reason that this equipment shouldn't have been available. And then also David Young, officer with the Graham Police Department in North Carolina, and then also involved in drone training in not just North Carolina and in the States, but his organization is doing training around the world. You know, mentions in this article that a drone could have been used to alert of, you know, an individual on a rooftop. So as with anything, you know, the Secret Service spent $70,000 on a small unmanned aircraft, from Axon in 2022, it spent over $200,000 on drones from Atlantic Diving Supply and Paladin Defense Services. It talks about how DJI drones were banned from use by DHS and DOD organizations. But even with that being a factor, there are U.S.-made products that exist. So those questions of, you know, why wasn't a drone available? Is that something you guys had thought of at all when you saw this? Or
I think that might have tickled the back of my head, but I mean, I think we're definitely going to start seeing that implemented now, you know, just the security being maximized and people pointing that out. It's like, why wasn't there eyes in the sky looking out for a VIP, you know? I mean, with those rallies, I'm assuming NOTAMs, DROTAMs pop up and there's going to be a no-fly zone for that area. But I mean, even still, you could, being Secret Service, they could have a drone up, you know, it could be incredibly beneficial just having that perspective.
Are you promoting drone up?
I said, what do you
draw? Don't do that.
What do you mean?
You said you could have a drone up. I was just joking. Like,
I missed
drone
that
up.
Phrasing.
Drone up.
You could have a drone fly upwards.
Kind of touching on what Samuel had to say. I mean, I don't see a reason to not have a drone kind of pacing the perimeter. I mean, it's going to save you manpower. But I don't know. This really came down. It's an open field with three buildings on it. There was just neglect in more than one area. Let's just say that. So the drones would have been a help, but I don't think it mattered in the end.
Well, so you can see how slanted this roof is, right? Right. So here's this roof. Here's this roof. I just did want to point out the slant of this one roof here, the red one. I mean, that's pretty pitched. That's a pretty significant slant. We're looking at this video. There is a drone video that came out for anyone that's on audio only. This is post assassination attempt. So you can see how there's, like, you know, the debris and the litter and the garbage. So someone went and flew their drone. But there's an angle where it's flying. You can see the red building where the counter sniper team was, and the significance of the slope of the roof. And then you can see as we're flying away in the direction of where the sniper was, you can see a rooftop with a, you know, significantly less slope. What's really interesting, you can go on Google Earth, and I don't know if you guys did it at all. But there was ground footage that came out pre.
Yeah, the whole
map. There you go. I sent some things out, and like, but when I saw that ground footage from this area, I started to think, like, I want to see this. And you know what was very easy to figure out? This right here, this AC or whatever this unit is with the four pipes coming out of it. Once I saw that in someone's ground video, I immediately was able to find that on Google Earth because it's clear enough to see. So I was able to start to almost piece together, you know, where these people were. And this is a very strange setting. But once you get there and you start looking, you're like, how in the heck was that possible? So,
yeah.
So what is really interesting to add to that is not just this perimeter security, but I saw a really neat post, and I wish I had it up here. You can find it. It's been circling like LinkedIn. Imagine a drone on a tether, right? Because when you're a human and you're a sentry, like the human that's supposed to be at their post and you're scanning, right? A human being is, you know, visually scanning 10 degree intervals. If you were on top of that building behind former President Trump, you're going to see this rooftop, this rooftop, this rooftop, right? There might be eight different locations that you would consider a threat. So what you have to do is the entire time before, during the president speaking, you're having to go from here to here to here to here to here and back and forth. And if you get distracted, you know, you forget to look at this one, you get complacent, right? Something happens. Now, once you see something, you have to alert. So someone posted, like, you should have a drone that could go up in the air and you can program it to autonomously pan from point to point to point to point. And if anything pops up during that scan, it will automatically alert the whole team. So it's like, it's not just having a drone, it's having the right drone that's integrated, because security for a former president and the amount of space and tying it in, it's not just as simple as someone showing up and having a going, all right, guys, I'm going to do circles.
Well, kind of going off of what you're saying, maybe they deemed it unnecessary to use drones for this event due to the fact that there was only one building within a close proximity that could be a threat. Like, they obviously knew that was a threat because they had two counter snipers on the red barn looking directly at it. So they probably just thought they had their bases covered, and then it would be kind of hard to pick out a suspect in a crowd, especially if they're concealing a weapon with a drone. It would probably be better just have like on deck people looking for that.
And if people were really inside the building in order to secure it, that's the craziest. I mean, I guess that makes sense. Like if your objective was like to secure this building from a military army training mindset, be like, all right, we're going to go inside and we're going to point our guns out the windows and we're going to lock the doors and no one's going to get in the building. It's like, who cares if someone's inside the building? Once they're inside the building, they've like secured this building means secure the rooftop. So I think there was miscommunication. I think if you take an ineffective team and you add a tool to an ineffective team, it's not going to change the outcome. Yeah. Because they're not going to use it appropriately. They didn't use the people appropriately. So if you take an effective team and give them an appropriate tool, now they're going to see benefits and results. Hell, an effective team with even less off tool, they will still make use of it. So I think it was complacency, the September 10th mindset versus the September 12th mindset, and just a more relaxed.
Well, it's been a while since an assassination attempt has been made on a president or president-elect, correct? I mean, it's been a long time.
Reagan, I keep hearing Reagan. One. And I'm like, if Ronald Reagan was then I'm pretty sure that was before I was alive. So like very rare. And you hear someone's on a rooftop. Do you think some Trump supporter climbed on a roof to get a better view? You know, maybe that was somebody's first thought is like, you know, why did some attendee climb on the roof? Let's get them down. A lot to unpack. Drones could have helped, but only if they're. My opinion here on the where were the drones is they had them. They weren't using them because they probably didn't fully understand how to apply it, like Terry said, to that specific site. And ultralight, what do we got here, Terry? What we're moving from just trending. This is something that we're going to dive into just because of the significance. But to get, you know, into the drone industry stuff. On the tech side here, you got something really interesting.
So I found this link on Google. Thank you, Google, for making these episodes possible for us.
That's a sponsor, huh?
I think over in China at, I'm probably going to pronounce this wrong, Beihang University. They made I'm just going to sum it up in simple words. They made a drone that is lighter than a piece of paper that can theoretically you just keep going. I mean, there would be mechanical failure, and that's what ended up happening. I think one of the rotors broke or something after an hour, but it sustained flight using the solar energy of the sun, and it sustained flight for an hour.
It's quite remarkable. I mean, just going through this article.
Yeah.
Palm-sized miniature rotorcraft purely powered by solar lift its own given mass with nothing but sunlight. The entire thing weighs about as much as 4 paper clips. Wow. Can fly all day if the sun is shining. And of course,
yeah,
I can see that.
I mean, it's not doing anything like too useful. Sorry. It's not doing anything too useful now other than just gaining data. But this is a step in the right direction for imagine you had one of these big boys and it could have a camera on it and it was at the Trump rally and it was just scanning constantly without using battery power. I mean, I don't know.
Yeah. This video, cause there's a
meat Coulomb fly
decent amount to like unpack. And he's lifting the piece of paper in the video. And once he lifts the piece of paper, the solar panels, they receive the light. So they also have a brush, like a little mini tiny whoop drone, brushless motors that they took off and they were flying. This video is talking about how cool drones are and this research. So they uncover the solar panels. It's balanced by this board. So you can see the board has wiring. And there's this rotor, and this video will continue, but it's showing the two solar panels. It's connected up to that like the board that modulates things. And it's about the polarity in the stators, and every other stator has reversed polarity, positive, negative. And then as the rotors go through it, they're reversing the polarity, and the reverse polarity pushes it away. So it's constantly pulling itself toward the next rotor or stator and pushing itself from the previous stator. It's really crazy technology. And so it's using the electricity in real time. It's not storing it. And the conventional motor you can see in this video is getting very warm and hot. With this design that they've created for this motor, it's very open and the temperature stays very low. And now what you see here is, look how small this is. Look how tiny that motor is.
It's a different one.
It is a different one. But the same concept. Like this right here, I'm going to guess this is millimeters.
It's a little cute drone.
A little baby drone.
A little bug.
Pop it off.
And so it's not so much that this is the drone as much as this could be four motors. And it's super lightweight, powered
no
by
battery.
The sun.
Can you imagine like trying to lift off with a battery? No way.
So you use enough of these and it can only fly in sunlight. So the whole outside, the whole top of your drone would be a solar panel, and you'd have like 8, 10, 15 of these. And it's
all I can think about is putting one of these bad boys on a paper airplane and somehow like using it.
Yeah.
Make a very lightweight paper airplane. Just keeps going.
And so this one here, it looks like it only has two stators, right? Like on each side is your stator of alternate polarity with your very small 5 or 6 rotors here. And then these are pitched. Those are your blades. Look how tiny your blades are. And so this thing is, for those looking in the video, this is a quarter here, but this tiny electrostatic motor drone eVTOL is it's tinier than George Washington there.
That took some skill to make. We got to appreciate that. That's some fine craftsmanship right there.
It's truly fascinating. And they had one fly, like Terry said, for an hour until it experienced a mechanical failure. It's just
very curious how this is going to look as it gets scaled up.
And this next one here, as I mentioned last week, this doesn't make sense to me. This is going to be fun to unpack because there's some that are like 100% EV. We have to be all, you know, like EV or die and dump tons of money into EV. And then there's the other folks that are like, I want to guzzle gasoline and, you know, I would really prefer to just drill my gas from right underneath my house, and we should drill as much as we can. Cause, at the end of the day, the way I see it, I just want energy prices to go down. And if you want to pick to drive and use gas as your form of energy for your car, that's great. If you want to use your home electricity for your energy, that's fine. As long as both prices are going down, I'll be a pretty happy camper. But with that said, the big thing is Terry was like, I think he was like anti NASCAR, EV, the sound or something like that. And now what I'm finding out is Terry's like pro EV Harley Davidson. And if there's anything that is supposed to be loud and obnoxious, it's a Harley Davidson, Terry. But you're telling me that you could get down with a like a electric Harley?
Hear me out. Nobody likes driving down the road and hearing somebody with four speakers and their loud Harley with down facing exhaust hitting the concrete. Nobody likes that, all right? And
hate it. I hate it. I don't just not
it's
like
terrible.
It.
Terrible. I have one and I don't like it, all right? It's stupid. All right. Now, the reason I like motorcycles and the reason I'm starting to get into it is because it's very efficient. It's a little dangerous, but it's very efficient. I mean, yeah, you're getting like 40 miles a gallon on my 1990 motorcycle that I have. Could you imagine the efficiency?
That's a great year, by the way. If anyone listening, 1990, probably the best year in history, but you can continue, Terry.
Well, I'm glad you think that. I would say 2004 when I was born was the best year, but I don't know.
Someone else was born in 1990, but you can guess who that was.
So, I mean, it's just the efficiency of having a motorcycle. And then imagine Harleys only get up to, I would say, like 115, unless you have like the Screaming Eagle. There's faster. We're talking about like chopper
speed.
Type bikes.
Okay.
Yeah. The speed on this thing would be terrifying to have, and the torque on it would be terrible. Like the cops wouldn't chase these, they would just give up immediately. I don't know.
On an electric, yeah. Well,
there's no sound, you can't even hear where it's at. You just it's gone.
It's like I think 75 miles to the gallon was like what I was getting on a Ninja 250.
Yeah, no, it's ridiculous.
So that's the thing, like bikes, like most bikes inherently are just like have really good gas mileage. But I don't think people are riding their Harleys because they're like, oh, I'm trying to get great gas mileage. It's about, you know, the vibration on your, you know, tush, right? It's about that, the loudness. But like you said, the bike's so loud, the speakers have to be even louder. It's very, none of it makes sense. And I think that's what makes it make sense. And this is crazy, right? Because now to get from Harley is going to manufacture, research, or I don't even know, develop electric motorcycles, receiving $89 million in federal funding. The federal government is handing out $89 million for electric motorcycles as part of a $1.7 billion federal investment that is associated with the Inflation Reduction Act. I'm confused. Right? Not sure how this is going to, like, getting electric Harley Davidsons. I mean, you know, Bike Week's going to be quiet, you know. Hey, you can take your kids to Daytona Bike Week now because it'll be a little quieter. But how this reduces inflation is interesting. So, $89 million for a manufacturing plant in, of all places, Pennsylvania, right? Biden administration announced this. So it's really interesting, because then on the other side, as I mentioned in the beginning of this conversation, there's like dumping just millions of dollars into this electric stuff where it has value, but I don't know if that is what it needs versus the other side's like, hey, I'm repealing all this for the requirement for electric. So some of this EV stuff is almost like other things. It's almost manufactured. Speaking of manufacturing, it's like the need and the drive for electric is manufactured by retraining 1,300 union workers and hiring another 125 employees. So what are your thoughts, Samuel? What do you think? Money,
in politics, terms of like EV, what do you think investment would be an appropriate amount to invest for EV? Because I mean, this was what, 89, how much you said, billion? That's huge. So I'm just trying to think.
Million.
Okay. I was like,
$1 million.
And that's billion. Just a
$1 million.
Yeah, and that's just like, the Harley Davidson. I think the total was bigger.
Right. So I'm just trying to think in my head, like, if I was going to, like, I'm trying to think what Harley Davidson is doing. Are they trying to, like, specifically go for a new audience? Because, I mean, like you said, Paul, there's already kind of an audience built out for Harley. So, I mean, what are they doing here? Are they specifically just going for, you know, we'll make you an electric motorcycle, here it is, and you get one and that's kind of it, but they got the 89 million.
Yeah, so to get into that, so this groundbreaking program, it's catalyzing expansion of industrial capacity to meet the president's climate goals and allow tens of thousands of skilled American workers to participate in the great comeback story of American manufacturing. A national climate advisor to the president said. So the investment is one, because we got to save the climate. And then two, it's reinvesting into plants that are at risk. I think it's right above it. It's converting 11 closed or at-risk auto manufacturing facilities in 8 states to make these electric motorcycles or the parts for them.
I bet the workers are happy for that.
But you know, this does make sense because think about it. There is this whole push. I didn't realize it. Like, you're not going to, like if things went the way they're supposed to, by 2035, all vehicles have to be electric, all new vehicles, right? Gas vehicles aren't just going to poof disappear. If it's like the way that it was going is by this year, every new vehicle is electric. You could still buy a used gas car. So that kind of makes sense, because if you say vehicles, you mean motorcycles too. So it's almost like this is just another piece of the whole EV pie, which is very interesting, because I guess now as I'm learning, a lot of this is politically driven. You know, are cars ruining the environment? Is this happening? What's best for the auto manufacturing industry, jobs in America? There's a hell of a lot of people that are employed. I think we talked about it previously. 1.4% of the U.S. population is employed in auto industry. It's like over 4 million people have jobs in auto. So lots of layers here.
So, but, I mean, is there any details on how long this is supposed to last, that money? Do they have a roadmap of the years of this much we allocated for this year, this year, this year? Because I think that would, I don't know, I would find that incredibly beneficial to know that, hey, by 2029, we're going to be self-sufficient, having our own plants with EV Harleys coming out. Or are they going to need more funding after that? Government funding. Because that's the big kind of takeaway for me, is like, is this going to be a one-off payment, which probably not, but I mean, that's kind of where the EV space is for, minus a select few, I would say. But that might just be the nitty gritty.
Yeah, that's a good question. It doesn't really say here. It just says they announced it. Today's announcement complements, Jesus, $177 billion in private sector investment in EV and battery manufacturing. I'm going to have to maybe dive back in there, but like, I see what you're saying, like over how much time, Like, are they just getting a lump sum? Is it based on certain milestones, I would imagine, as far as hiring and things of that nature? Sam, are you getting yourself a motorcycle? You have an electric.
I mean, as an EV motorcycle, that sounds kind of cool. I'll have to think about that. Right up to Terry's place with
you.
It.
Have a sidecar. Yeah.
Can I defend myself real quick?
Yeah.
So,
you're going to get a sidecar for it so that you can, like, is it like a long range battery? He's like, but come on, you could do storage and increase the range.
That'd be pretty cool. I'm going to defend myself real quick. The reason I'm not on par, like, I don't like the NASCAR. NASCAR is stupid as is, but if it was like the street racing thing, it would be cool. But if they're going around in circles, man, you at least got to make them loud. That's my stance on it. I'm down for electrified vehicles. I like hybrid vehicles. I want a hybrid vehicle. It's great gas mileage. I still want the gas component of it because I think they're a little more reliable right now, but electric, we'll get there eventually. I'm just saying now, I'm not riding with EV. I think it should develop in the future, and I hope it does. But for now, I like my gas cars, and I would rather have a gas or an electric motorcycle than a gas motorcycle. That's all I'm saying.
Have you seen the e-bikes, Terry?
Yeah. No, they're electrified motorcycles. Yeah, but they're not like crazy. Like, they definitely, those need to be developed the most, in my opinion.
Okay. All right. You haven't seen this one.
Clearly not.
You haven't seen the, I got to make sure.
I fell down that rabbit hole and I just got e-bike ads for like 3 days. It's kind of cool.
I think we need to make the driving test a little harder before I'm like real into motorcycles. Because I almost get hit in my car.
And the other thing too is, but like Formula One, like if you really think about Formula One, that is a hybrid engine. It's a really small, I think 1.8 liter engine in a Formula One car. And then they've got battery. So they're like charging the battery. And actually when they do the DRS assist or whatever it is, they're actually using battery power in order to like have that very quick passing quick takeoff speed. So this is a company called Amflow, AMFLOW. For those listening on audio only, you got a sweet picture of an Amflow bike just shredding up some leaves and debris and just cutting into a mountain. You see this bike?
Yeah.
If I told you that this was powered by DJI, would you be surprised?
Honestly, kind of
not at all. Yeah. They're good. They make batteries, man.
This is an electric mountain bike.
They have a sick website. And I want to say that.
This is an electric mountain bike. Look at that frame. Inside that frame is a DJI Avinox power drive system. This just came out.
Where is that, this being manufactured?
How much does this cost?
This, I do not know the answer to that question. But this video right here, this cutaway, that right there, that isn't the Avinox DJI electric drivetrain system for a mountain bike.
My friend's into mountain biking. He lives in Arkansas, like one of the biggest, like they have the most like trails for mountain biking. I'm going to send this to him later. I'm sure he'll like this.
It's like the drone. It's got different modes. Like you could put your car or your drone, you can have it in you know, tripod mode, slow mode. It has eco mode, trail mode, turbo mode. Turbo mode.
As if mountain That's biking crazy. Wasn't dangerous enough.
And for the most challenging trails or steep inclines, activate boost mode.
That's wild.
Insane.
I want to see more videos of them going mode. Up with it because it's just making it look like a breeze.
So this battery is just in the frame. They built a super lightweight frame, right, using materials, and DJI has taken this technology that they've, right, the same type of electric propulsion, charging, right, 0 to 75 in an hour and a half. Anyway, I don't know how the hell did we get on bikes?
How much does this cost?
That's a good question, right? You want one?
Go to the top.
It doesn't say
personally.
I don't think. Did they put the price out? Yeah, they didn't. I subscribe, so just so you know, I put my email in here because I was like, I might need a new hobby. You know?
Post this link in the Discord for me.
Yeah,
I'll send it to my friend, and if he gets one, I'll let y'all know how it is.
We'll have him on.
Yeah,
but it's crazy. It just goes on and on, and it's got the app. It's got anti theft. Cool. It's, I mean, it'll lock itself up. It will literally lock the. Go ahead.
Mountain bikes take a lot of hits. I wonder how durable it is. Because, I mean, there's a frame there. Yeah. And it's a square frame. I wonder how, like, hard it could get hit before it just breaks completely. Like, that's a lot of repairing to do for that. Because that's the whole frame. That probably costs, like, $600 easily.
Yeah, that's... That's a good question. And it looks like they have a couple different options here as far as how many watt hours. You got 800 watt hour, 600 watt hour options. I mean, looking at what from the images and stuff they have on here, it looks like they've like built a legit mountain bike, and they've just figured out how to, you know, insert
make it faster.
Yeah, and then just insert this into the system. But did I do that? I'll drop that in the chat. So that was some cool stuff. How did we get on
the bikes? Harley bikes.
Getting a little off topic never hurt anybody.
Bikes.
Yeah, bikes. That was a good one there. See DJI, and then when I saw that, I'm like, oh my god, they're gonna steal your bike route information. Like
no.
Yeah, it's like, so even if you take this, it's just like this company is literally finding a way to take that proven electric propulsion motor drive and build it and adapt it into other things. Oh, moving on. A couple stories to wrap up here. Our success story, case study success story for the week. Youngstown Police Department in Ohio. Drone used to catch suspects in chase. City patrolman Dylan Bell heard the call for a chase early Tuesday morning. Dylan Bell is the midnight shift officer. He's the only drone pilot on the midnight shift for the Youngstown, Ohio Police Department. Tuesday morning on North Side, he started to head that way from the South Side beat in case he was needed. He didn't know that he would not only end up helping out, but he would be using one of the department's drones for the first time when there was an actual crime in progress. The drone tracked two people who had abandoned a stolen Mercedes. 2.5 years, this Sergeant Bell has been with the PD, and he became a drone operator after his lieutenant, who leads the drone program for the police department, asked him if he'd be, you know, willing to become a drone operator. And he's mentioned it's something that's going to bring the police department into the future. So this Sergeant Bell had taken some online courses that lasted about a month, and then he took the exam. And what he mentioned was he had received the 107, his remote pilot certificate, very recently. And all of his flights, really up until this point, had been flying just in more of a training environment. So what an awesome success story, how first time out, right? This patrolman deploys the drone and is able to catch suspects of a stolen vehicle.
It's pretty impressive.
I'd be upset if I got caught by a drone. At least when they use the helicopter. That took effort. That's just some dude sitting in his patrol car, just put his DJI on top of the roof, doing it as lazily as possible.
That's called effective skills put into a practice.
That is effective. Yeah. It would make me upset.
He said sitting in the in his car, putting the drone on his roof.
It's that third shift worker we're talking about, man.
You think he threw out the launch pad
when he got the call?
Yo, this is like 2 a.m. It's dark out. You know, what are you supposed to like you could go chasing like this, for departments that don't have a drone. This is, there's like what, 2 outcomes. They have to chase the person into an area that they aren't familiar with, where the person's maybe laying in wait. Or they don't even chase him at all. And they just go, meh. Meh. The car's here. Do we need to catch the people?
Well, meh. I feel like this is a really interesting point, too, because it talks about he got one of them and then the other two got out. So I feel like at that point, you don't even bother chasing. You might as well, like, hey, you know, I can't chase after someone who's like already a minute ahead of me. But what can I use? I can use the technology at hand and speed up and catch with them, you know, especially with thermal.
Yeah, you're right. The driver of the Mercedes was taken into custody. 3 other people ran away. And then the other thing, too, is when you have 3 people running, it's like, how do you know where to go? You might have 2 officers. It's right. Nighttime, right? 1 versus 3, even 2 versus 3, you don't have the upper hand. Most folks are taught, at least in the military, you're taught, you really don't standard operations. You don't engage if you know you don't have, right, an advantage, an upper hand, some sort of superiority, whether it's location, troop size, weapons capability. Like, there's very few instances with special operations and, you know, the things you see in the movies where it's like, yo, we don't have any other option. There's 5 of us. There's 3 of us. There's 4 of us. Like that movie Lone Survivor comes to mind, where it's like, you know, your back's against the wall. So search for the people in the darkness. In darkness, he was looking for their heat signatures through the drone's thermal camera. And you mentioned Samuel, after 10 minutes, he was able to locate 2 of them. So a real force multiplier. And I'm sure he got out of the car, Terry, and like at least folded the arms out, you know.
I was joking, man. We got to add something, all right?
Well, soon it's going to be from a computer. Why not have it be from a computer? DFR, drone as a first responder. The officer doesn't even have to be on site. You literally just click a point on the map. That
person's definitely going to be asleep. Working from home, 12 a.m.
Ultimate efficiency. And now, so go ahead, Samuel.
I had this crazy vision of like, there's a tube on a tall building somewhere and it shoots the drone, like it does a pneumatic air cannon, shoots the drone out. The drone's active. It turns on. It starts going to where it needs to go. Just, I don't know where my mind's going. I just envision that when you
said. It lets out smaller drones so it can scan the area more effectively.
That's what they're shooting out of, like aircraft. They're like, instead of shooting like a missile, you can shoot the drone. I think one of them was called the Switchblade.
Yeah, we went over that. Did we? Right? The Switchblade, I'm pretty sure.
That was like one of the first episodes, I think.
Potentially. Yeah, it's a while ago.
Yeah, I think so. It just shoots out and then unfolds like a Switchblade.
Mortars that are more dangerous somehow.
Yes. And so the last thing in closing here, one of the 2 last things is the NDAA, which we've discussed previously. The Senate version of the NDAA has been published. And so there's the House version, there's the Senate version. The House votes on theirs, the Senate votes on theirs. And what we've seen, and there's a Drone Life article that was posted this week that discusses how the Senate version of the NDAA does not include the Countering CCP Drones Act. The House version includes it, but the Senate version doesn't. So when the Senate put theirs together, it doesn't include any of this ban, anti-Chinese, anti-DGI, none of those drones anymore. So the House voted yes for that version. The Senate is voting on a different version. And so if they're approved and there's differences, then they have to have a committee, which the article explains. Then that committee comes together and they have to hash out and compromise, like, all right, let's get rid of that. We should include this. And they come to an agreement. That agreed on final version is re-voted on and likely accepted. So while things were looking doomy and gloomy like 2 weeks ago with the way that the House version was being approved, the fact that it's been left out of the Senate version means that there's still hope. So then they approve this, they get together, and then someone's really going to have to explain why that ban has to take place. But I think a lot of people have spoken up, and I think that there is momentum in order to prevent that. Now, what the Senate version has is not, they didn't include the Countering CCP Drones Act, but what they have included is verbiage and wording that speaks to the direction we should be headed. So authorized increased funding for the development of new and innovative design, manufacturing, and productive techniques of uncrewed systems, and then requires a strategy to develop a secure domestic and allied supply chain of critical components for drones. So they're not saying, let's just ban DJI. What is that going to fix? We need to fund the development of and secure domestic and allied supply chain. We need to create something that's not going to just stop and make a change today, but something we can actually build on for years to come. And then it also includes language that applies to counter UAS technology, which we talked about previously with the drone cannon or gun or whatever it is. And it's saying we need to develop and have our own systems, just like we need our own UAS systems. So things look promising. I mean, there is certainly some common sense still in existence at this level. Any thoughts you guys have on that?
I think that's really some good news that we've received over the past, how many episodes we've been talking about it comparatively. It's exciting to hear. I was kind of thinking things were not looking so great. So that was brought up to the table.
Yeah. So for, the drones that you have that are DJI that are in existence, whether it's your Phantoms, your Avadas, your Avada 2, your FPV stuff, your mini drone, you're going to be able to continue to fly that and enjoy it. And, no one at a consumer level needs to be losing any sleep that their drone is going to get taken away, zapped, or become irrelevant. And at this point, the future outlook for new products and systems for the commercial and civilian side, it is looking, hopeful that a more phased approach can come. If this is a security risk, then we should not be using it at the federal level. And those limitations already exist. There's already bans on these products. And I think the industry is in a good position. A lot of people have spoken out. We mentioned Luis Figueredo in our first segment. he is one of those people that is as active as anyone else of making sure that people hear, you know, the value of that DJI product in public safety. And how, I guarantee you, I don't think it said it, but the Youngstown Police Department, guarantee you it was a DJI drone. And so at this point, public safety agencies, like, they want you to know they're using drones. They're probably not just going to come out and say, hey, it was a DJI drone. Because what we really need for the industry is just for people in general to talk about the value that they're adding. And if we can continue to use DJI, there's going to be a lot more conversations about how valuable drones are without the brand being attached to it. And that's what's going to drive government support at the federal level, state level, positive VC investment, not no bullshit stories, but like the truth of what drones can add. So a great episode. Another great episode.
Like the EV bikes.
Yeah, starting out. I mean, definitely some real time political drama, you know, happening in real time. And as I mentioned to someone else, I mean, the politics and drama have probably always gone hand in hand. I think I'm getting old. I know I'm getting old. I have kids. One can hit a baseball that you pitch to them. So I'm like, this is awesome. But when I'm even thinking or recognizing more of what the hell's happening in politics, you're not 20 years old. Well, there are some people, you know, there's some definitely, you know, youthful folks heavily involved in politics. But for the most part, you know, I don't think there's a lot of 20-year-olds that had the news on TV while they were going in and out of washing their car. But anywho, we were able to dive into that and discuss a little about how drones could have helped at this event and how people will probably be not just dropping drones off at these sorts of events going forward, but really taking a deep dive into, you know, if a drone was here and available, or if a drone was sitting in a box and wasn't used, how should it have been used? Where should it have been used? And hopefully we see that in the future. We talked about the ultralight electrostatic VTOL drone with the feat of engineering, the new method of power, and then also how small it was. That was a really cool story that Google provided Terry this week. Spent more time talking about Harley Davidson than I ever thought I would in my whole entire life. But that's cool, this whole electric thing. And hey, if the money's there, use it or lose it. That's what they say, right? I'm sure Harley isn't complaining, and who can argue against jobs? Police in Youngstown using drones to help aid in the search for suspects on foot during nighttime operations. You know, congratulations to Sergeant Bell out there for, you know, his first mission using his drone and applying his 107 certificate. Good job. Great job there. Then, you know, a little ending the episode on a positive note with the Senate version of the NDAA, which looks like it may leave the door open for a phased approach to tackling this, you know, UAS manufacturing puzzle that is still very much in pieces. So thank you everybody for tuning in and for listening. As always, we appreciate your time and attention and for you checking in, reading, and supporting dronelife.com. Thank you, Terry. Thank you, Samuel, for all the value that you added. Really appreciate that. And we hope everybody has a phenomenal week, and we'll see you on the next episode.